Welcome to the TPL Show, a podcast dedicated to the study and discussion of leadership. Join us as we share relevant, simple, and lasting methods for improvement that can be used to lead from any level in any organization.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the TPL Show. This is Dave, and I'm here with Luke.
Hey, guys.
And today, we're going to talk more about decision-making and the alignment that comes after decision-making. But we're going to talk about it in very practical terms. We hope to add a very powerful tool to your tool belt called Commitment Lock.
Yeah, this is a good one. I like this one.
So we're going to just jump right in, like we always do, and talk about what is Commitment Lock, why is it important, how do we use it, et cetera. So I'll start with what Commitment Lock is.
All right.
So Commitment Lock is a simple, ancient, powerful tool for ensuring individual alignment with a decision, plan, or action. And it's comprised of two proven methods that are combined, oath-taking and public square. Now, we have several proven methods that we use to design human systems in Avanulo, and we'll cover those over time, but these two are very important, oath-taking and public square, and when combined together in this way, we see this tool Commitment Lock.
There's 12 proven methods, right?
That's right.
And then, yeah, this is two of those 12.
Yeah, right. And there's really this idea of 12 plus one. There's this 13th that we talk about, which is be kind.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Commitment Lock is a call for action posed in the form of a question to each person present at the time the decision is made, and actually just past the point that the decision is made.
Okay.
And Commitment Lock in its modern form was revived by restaurant owners who used it to confirm reservations and persuade people to call them if their plans changed. Mm-hmm. So this is a very interesting thing. People would make reservations in the old days by calling, right, as opposed to online.
Yeah.
And when they'd call for that reservation, the person taking the reservation, the host or the hostess, would just simply say, thank you, we'll see you tomorrow at 7,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And a bunch of people wouldn't show up.
No,
maybe
sure.
30%, 35% of, wow, those people wouldn't show up, then leaving those spaces empty and depriving the restaurant of
costing them money,
of revenue opportunities, yep, right? So restaurant owners began to come up with an idea, just asking a simple question. Will you, if your plans change, will you call and, right, and let us know? And then wait for the answer. So they used to actually say, if your plans change, call and let us know.
Yeah, it's like a general.
Right?
Yeah.
But that didn't work.
No.
So then they moved to a question. If your plans change, will you call and let us know? And wait for the answer. And then people, of course, would say yes. Who wouldn't? It's a reasonable thing to say,
sure,
yes to. And they cut way more than in half,
oh, wow,
the amount of times that they were surprised by people not showing up by doing this.
So that must have some psychological effect, right?
Yeah, it does. It has this this effect of creating a commitment,
right,
that you then will feel dissonance if you don't meet the commitment that you agreed to, because everyone likes to keep their word. So this was, you know, tremendous learning. We learned about it in Avanulo years ago, and we started to apply it to safety. Mm. We applied it to safety courses in our Gestalt safety program. So for instance, we do ladder training, teach everyone about how to safely use a ladder at work. And then we'd simply go around the room to every individual participant in that class. Will you agree to follow the safety rules for ladder use? Will you agree to turn a ladder in if it doesn't meet inspection? Will you agree to inspect it every time?
Hmm.
So this increased dramatically people's compliance to safety standards. And then over time, we started seeing that we could use this on the shop floor in other topics than just safety, and ultimately all the way to the boardroom. Mm-hmm. So Commitment Lock now is something that we teach our clients and we use, and it creates past the point of decision, a magnifier, a force magnifier that really revs up commitment and leads people to work on that decision, support that decision, and make sure it's successful. So that's what it is. That's what commitment lock is, right?
All right, so let's jump into the why commitment lock is valuable. So let's stick with the rational, emotional, tangible reasons that we've
I love when we do that
in previous episodes. So for this one, commitment lock, the rational reason is where commitment lock is supported by well-accepted concepts in psychology. There's that psychological effect.
Yeah.
Right? When people make an active I will or I shall commitment in public, they're much more likely to honor that commitment than when making the commitment in private or in a passive setting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there it is. That's the rational reason behind it. The emotional reason is the regular use of commitment lock builds a culture of professionalism that minimizes lip service and exposes sycophants.
Yeah, sure does. So the yes men are made very visible by this because they just say yes to everything. They never push back.
Right.
And then the people that do lip service, they're in there, they committed, and then they don't follow through. And so what it does is set this expectation for professionalism. It's wonderful. What it makes the culture much more professional over time.
And raises accountability too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So the tangible reason behind this is when a decision is clear and everyone commits to that decision, the chance of success doubles or even triples.
Boom. That's the deal. When you use commitment lock, you just have a more successful organization.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the three reasons, or the rational reason, emotional reason, and tangible reason. And that's the why commitment lock is valuable.
Great.
So we're going to use something a little different in today's episode for commitment lock. So we've always done the what, why, how. We're going to do that today, but we're also going to add one more. It's going to be the when.
When.
So when would you use commitment lock? So let's talk about that real quick.
Sure.
Commitment lock is used when it's important to be certain that everyone involved will do their utmost to make a decision work.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody in agreement for one thing, yes, follow through, held accountable. And commitment lock is used after the decision is made and after the path forward is made very clear with a commitment question.
Uh-huh. And so commitment question, this is kind of a sub-tool inside a commitment lock we'll cover later. But in other words, we don't use commitment lock to make the decision. It's something that follows the decision.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
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 And then commitment lock is never used as an actual selection tool.
Ah, there you go.
So it's not used to decide upon an option for a path forward based on who will commit to it.
Right. Okay.
So it's just to get the commitment on the action.
Yeah. All right. That's clear. So we made the decision. And now we're going to move to commitment lock.
Right.
Okay.
And that's it. So that's when commitment lock is going to be used.
Got it. All right. So let's dive into how we use commitment lock. And the steps are pretty simple, but we'll also cover some of the scientific stuff that supports it and explains why it works and so on. So, so the first step is confirm that the decision's been made and you're on the eastern side, the right side of the decision line in the theory of the decision line model. So if that's unclear to you, what is that? That's fully explained in the TPL show, season 1, episode 5, the theory of the decision line. So really, it's a good idea to go back and listen to that show.
Yeah, revisit that one.
And it'll help you understand more clearly about when we start this process of commitment lock. The second step is to write a commitment question, which begins with, will you or shall you? Will you is more common, right? So you start the question with will you, and then you spell out the details of the decision, the path forward, how you would support it, so that people can answer quite clearly,
very clearly,
I will or I won't.
Right.
Right? So you include in that commitment question a call to action, and you determine whether or not this is a goal implementation or an implementation intention. So these are kind of two different,
yeah, it's a little different
types of commitments that we're making, right? So this is coming from Peter Goldweitzer. He's a psychologist.
Okay.
And he was the first person to kind of explain this and make it clear to everyone what's going on. But in essence, a goal implementation is when you're going to bring about a desired state, such as achieving $1 million in sales. We will increase sales to $1 million this year.
Right? Yeah, very direct.
So we can then turn that into quite a simple commitment question.
Okay.
Will you work to increase sales to $1 million this year? Right. That kind of thing. Very, very simple, very clear. An implementation intention is a commitment to do something when a certain condition is present. It's an if-then statement. So if the raw materials come in late, then we will work on Saturday to finish the order on time.
Got it.
So a little bit different, but the same idea for both in that we're making this commitment. So if the raw materials come in late, will you agree to work on Saturday to finish the order on time? Right? This is your commitment question.
Got it.
Yeah. So we make sure that commitment statement is written or at least verbally repeated so it's clear to everybody in the form of a question that we can answer with the I will or I will not, right? So the first thing we do is confirm the decision's been made. The second thing we do is write a commitment question that we can all use as a basis to express our commitment or our lack of commitment.
Sure.
Right? So the third thing is to review the commitment question with everybody involved and make sure they fully understand it. Allow for discussion, modify the question if needed, and then come back to the point where we have this clear, viable commitment question.
I'm sure it's valuable to do all that up front. That way all the questions are answered. That way there's no uncertainty.
Yeah.
Everybody's knows exactly what the mission is or the statement is.
Absolutely.
The action, the goal, implementation goal.
Yes.
Say, this is what we're going to focus on. Will you or will you not?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Very direct.
So that's a great way to
summarize
it.
Nobody can walk away and say, well, I wasn't that clear. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that's exactly what we're trying to avoid, right? And then we are very crisp and we get people on the head of a pin, yes or no,
right? Okay.
The next thing we do is starting with the... So now, just summarizing that quickly again.
Okay.
We've made the decision. We've written or at least verbally expressed very clearly a commitment question.
Right.
We've hashed it out. Everybody fully understands it. Maybe we made a change or two, right? But now we've got that finished product, that commitment question. It's in front of us. Then whoever's facilitating just starts with the lowest ranking people and goes around the room, so to speak, ending with the highest ranking people, asking each individual whether or not they will commit to the decision.
So can you talk about that a little bit more with the low versus high ranking?
Oh, sure.
Why do you do the low first?
Sure. So if you ask people whether they commit or what their opinion is or for input or what is the truth of the matter, anything like that, in a room with people from various levels in the organization, if the highest ranking or a very high ranking person speaks first, you're done. All conversation is over because no one wants to contradict that person. So you're just done. Everyone goes, yep, that's it, that's it.
Yep.
And you don't get an honest exchange. You don't get candor and so forth. Now, if you don't want candor or you don't want an honest exchange, you just want it to come to a close and we're going to do what the boss says, then don't ask for opinions and just start with the opinion of the boss or
the declaration
of the boss, right? Now there's modification that you can say, here's what we're doing, but if anyone sees any flaw, you should tell me right now. Okay. But mostly when you're doing this, you start with the lowest ranking people in the room and you just progress until you get to the highest ranking people last. And it gets you the most candor, the most thoughtfulness and the most, open discussion.
That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. So you go around and ask them the question, each individual.
Okay.
You ask each individual. You stand in front of that individual. You look in their eyes, right?
Yeah.
And you ask them. And then you move to the next individual, look in their eyes.
Yes,
and it's very personal, very individual. Not this thing. Well, does everybody? No, that is not commitment lock.
Yeah.
Right? Because then people can hide passively in the crowd and stuff, right? So you do this on an individual by individual basis, person by person, and you go around and you understand. If someone will not commit, and by the way, that's pretty rare because the decision's already been made, and this is a commitment check really, right?
Sure.
But if that's the case, you discuss and you attempt to gain their commitment. If it's not possible after a reasonable period of time, then you close the session in one of three ways, but you'd be very clear. You have someone in authority over everyone present, simply declare what the path forward is going to be. This is it. We're moving on.
That's it.
Or you set a date and time and you defer the discussion until that time and move to get commitment lock at that follow-up meeting. Or you remove those who will not commit from involvement in the decision and the path forward. Okay, you're off the project, you're out of the project, you know, whatever it might be. Right?
That seems like that's probably a worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario.
You're not going to have a lot of people completely saying, nope, not going to support
this. Of course.
And walk out the
walk. Of course. The yeah. It's worst case scenario, but we have to include it as a process possibility. And when you do it, you're doing it with great respect and patience and so forth. But that's the idea, right?
Okay.
Remember, commitment lock isn't deciding. The decision's already made. So this whole discussion that we're having about what if is pretty rare.
Yeah.
But we've still got to provide you with a mechanism just in case.
Right? That all happens in the discussion or the theory of the decision line. So that decision line.
Yeah, when you're to the left of or west of the decision line, that's when all this is happening.
This happens.
But occasionally, it can happen.
It might come back up.
Sure. So we've got it in the process, but this doesn't happen when we're facilitating and using commitment lock. This doesn't happen one time in 100.
I haven't, not seen that.
Right. Okay. So once everyone involved is confirmed that they will commit to the decision and the path forward, declare that you have commitment lock. I know that these kinds of things, sometimes people hear them and they sound kind of corny, but it creates this hard break between we didn't have it and now we have it. And we know what commitment lock means. So, all right, we have commitment lock, right? And of course, someone could say, well, no, we don't. Oh, brother, you know, whatever. But we make a bit of a ceremony about it. We have commitment lock.
Because after that's been declared, nobody can walk out of that room and say, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Or I really wasn't there.
Yeah.
Because everybody agrees, walk out. There's no questions.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly so. And we make a record of the commitment. And before we break up, we establish the date and time for our first process check. Now, we'll cover what a process check is in a future episode. But in essence, it's when you all come back together, you review that decision and the path forward that you decided upon, and you simply do, you know, an after-action review, right? What was supposed to happen? What actually happened? What do you want to do about it? So building in that first process check so you know it's coming in 30 days or 60 days or 45 days, it's on the calendar, is very, very useful. It allows people to fully commit knowing that there'll be a chance to review this if there's any flaw in it within a reasonable time frame. So that is commitment lock.
Perfect.
You use this tool past the point of decision to make doubly sure, or as we say in Avanulo, double dang sure, DDS,
DDS,
right, that everyone's going to support this decision. So you form a commitment question, discuss it, make sure it's right, ask everyone around the room, do you commit, will you, shall you, et cetera, and get that positive answer, one person at a time, with eye contact. Once you've arrived at that, declare that you have commitment lock. We've got a little handout, a little paper you can request from us at info@tplshow.org, and we'll send it to you about commitment lock, and also some reference material where others have explored this idea and have used this idea and the benefit of it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We appreciate any feedback that you're willing to give us. And if you have any questions or would just like to share any experiences that you've had, please send us an email at info@tplshow.org. And we will see you next time on the TPL show.
So long.
Thank you for listening to the TPL show. We hope you'll apply what you learned today and tell us how it went. If you want to share, want more information, or have questions, please contact us at info@tplshow.org. Have a great day. Thank you.